I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Dr. Sherry Parks joins me for Midday Culture Connections. Today, a conversation about the hundreds of sexual assault allegations that have come out against powerful men in Hollywood and in other industries. At least 60 women have accused producer Harvey Weinstein of sexual assault. Last night, The New Yorker posted a story by Ronan Farrow alleging that Weinstein hired private investigators to collect information on his accusers and the journalists who tried to expose him in an effort to suppress stories about his predatory behavior. What makes the Weinstein revelations different? Is this a turning point for the way we address sexual assault? How did masculinity become so toxic? Midday Culture Connections with Dr. Sherry Parks gets underway right after these headlines. And good afternoon, everybody. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for joining us today. It's the Midday Culture Connections with Dr. Sherry Parks. We're going to have a conversation about the litany of sexual assault allegations that have come to light in recent weeks. So a warning to folks listening with kids, we will be talking about sensitive subjects on today's program. So to date, more than 60 women have accused Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein of sexual misconduct. The accusations range from indecent exposure to rape. Almost immediately after the New York Times and the New Yorker published stories on Weinstein, more people came forward with assault allegations against him and other powerful men in Hollywood, including producer James Toback and actor Kevin Spacey. At least 60 women have accused Bill Cosby of sexual assault. A majority of those accusations came to light in 2014 and 15. The trial in one of those cases ended in a mistrial earlier this year. Sexual assault accusations are, of course, not limited to Hollywood. Former President George H.W. Bush issued an apology after actress Heather Lind claimed that he touched her inappropriately from his wheelchair. Nobel laureate and Holocaust survivor Elie Wiesel was accused last week of doing the same thing. The New Republic's Leon Wieseltier, MSNBC's Mark Halperin, highly respected figures joining the ranks of Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly. NPR's top editor, Michael Oreskes, was forced to resign following accusations of sexual harassment against him. In many of these cases, the accused men have been fired from their prominent positions and they've lost major business deals. Many people have pointed to the fact that President Trump, despite boasting on tape about sexually assaulting women, was still elected and, of course, still holds office. So we've been thinking, something about the Weinstein case and its aftermath seems different. Is this a watershed moment for us to truly reckon with our history of rape and sexual violence? Is this avalanche of public accusations evidence of an eroding male power dynamic? According to the CDC, nearly 1 in 5 women have been raped. Are victims of sexual assault now feeling more empowered to speak out against their abusers? Dr. Sherry Parks joins me to explore these questions. She's an associate professor in the Department of American Studies at the University of Maryland College Park, and she's the author of Fierce Angels, Living with a Legacy, From the Sacred Dark Feminine to the Strong Black Woman. Hey, Sherry, good to see you.
Hey.
You are welcome to join our conversation as well, and I do hope, in fact, it will be a conversation. I will do my best to work in as many phone calls and emails as we can. 410-662-8780. That's our number here at Midday. Our email, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So let me pose that basic question to you. Is this a sort of watershed moment? Is there something different about this Weinstein case than the many other cases, highly publicized cases of sexual assault that we've been hearing about in just the last few years?
Yes and no. There's a long history of powerful men using their power to have access to the bodies of women. In this country, during slavery in the South, it was slave owners and enslaved women. In the North, it was businessmen and recently arrived immigrant women. And so there's a long history of that that goes well beyond the history of this country. And I think one of the reasons there's so many stories coming forward is that it's so common. And I should say at the front, and you know this, I'm a survivor of rape and a survivor of sexual harassment. Right. And this is not about me, but I think
right. But what you wrote about yeah, very
right,
compellingly in
right.
your book.
And yeah. people need to know that. But I do think this comes at an interesting moment in history, in that now women have a voice that they didn't have before. And so and this case happen in the open. That is Hollywood, that is the news media, that these are women who are newsworthy in their own right. And so when one comes forward, it's news. Before, when someone reported it, often they had then be quiet about it because nobody was listening. There was a phrase, you don't mess up a man's life with something like this, that got repeated over and over again. That was repeated to me. You don't mess up a good man's life. Well, if he's such a good man, maybe this wouldn't be a case. So I do think that a lot of things are converging in this moment, that women feel that they can speak out. Maybe you used the phrase in the promo, toxic masculinity. Maybe masculinity itself has some cracks in it, that the way we think of masculinity, that you can use that phrase toxic masculinity and it's not radical anymore. So I think that there is a moment. We'll have to see, though, because there have been other moments in American history when we thought there would be big disruption and there would be big change. And cultures have this ability to settle back into themselves. And so we'll have to see a year from now if there really was change.
Yeah, I mean, you think about, you know, when the Newtown massacre happened, people said, all right, this is it. This is it can't get any lower than this. A bunch of children, first graders were murdered. Surely there will be gun control or gun regulation legislation that will pass. Did not come to be. So you wonder, is the main difference here the fact that the people that Mr. Weinstein was accosting were celebrities in their own right? I mean, the fact that they were famous, they're not famous in the way, even somebody like Anita Hill wasn't famous,
right.
You know, when she had allegations against Clarence Thomas, who, and those allegations were swatted away by Justice Thomas, and he's been on the court ever since. But is it the fame and celebrity of the victims here? Is that's the only thing playing into it? Or is there... has this tsunami been, you know, building for so long over this historical arc that finally the dam has burst?
Well, I think the context is even bigger than that. One of the things that holds cultures in an equilibrium is how we look at power. Clarence Thomas had some extremely powerful friends. We know that now. And they weren't going to let that agenda be changed by a woman. Now... Harvey Weinstein did what he did for so long because he had so much power, and I'm sure we're going to talk about the New Yorker article that hit last night. So there was enormous power that was keeping him and lots of other men in power. There were other strategies. You mentioned Kevin Spacey. His House of Cards stopping production takes out $590 million from...
a whole lot of jobs.
2,000? Jobs, and so there are many, many...
From Maryland. From Aberdeen, Harford County, and Baltimore.
Right, it's particularly. So you have to weigh all of that when you're talking about, it's not just a man's life or a woman's life, and we have to say that Kevin Spacey was allegedly victimizing young men. That there are other economic and powerful forces that will create an equilibrium, and that women have to... often it's women, have to push back against all of that. And now some are able to, and I think you're right in that the fact that there were actresses, notice at first when it was just women who were reporters, while this was a scandal, these were not women that we had empathized with on the screen before. And I think that matters. But, like I said, there's an elastic ability for cultures to snap back to themselves.
And of course, Slate Magazine had a piece in which they basically tried to put a complete compendium of all of the people who have accused Weinstein of misconduct. It goes back to the 1970s.
Right.
And there were a bunch of production assistants, script readers, interns, you know, people who were not famous actress celebrities or actresses who had not yet achieved any fame.
Right.
And, you know, back then, you didn't hear about it, even if those rumors were flying around Hollywood or in certain places. It was certainly not public. I was also fascinated by a piece in the Times. The headline was "The Click Moment," how this Weinstein thing unleashed this tsunami of other accusations for about other men. And one of the points in that piece was that these are women who'd also grown up with working mothers. That it's a generational thing, that they've seen their mothers put up with this kind of injustice in their own jobs, the glass ceiling being enforced in many instances by sexual predators. That struck me as an interesting observation.
Well, and it's interesting in another way that when mothers go to work, obviously their families change. And there's been some research on the attitudes toward gender roles that change because you have a working mother, even in boys, that they will have a much wider definition of how women use power, because mom not only does the laundry, because women who work still do all that family and kin work. There's lots of studies that suggest that. But they also are going away to work, and they may have power, and they may talk about power. And so their little boys who are raised by women who work have a much broader definition of how women can move through the world, their daughters as well. So they may not come home and talk about how they were sexually harassed, maybe. I mean, often women haven't. But that means they may be much less likely to take it.
Mm-hmm. See, I asked my mom about this a couple of weeks ago. I was visiting her in Atlanta. She's 80, soon to be 86 years old. She was a nurse for many years. And I said, doctors hitting up on nurses was a famous meme. I mean, you heard about this all the time. Did that ever happen to you? And she said, oh, yeah, once. And I said, well, what happened? She said, well, this doctor, we were walking down the hallway in the middle of the hospital, and he grabbed me on my backside, and I slapped his hand, and I said, don't you dare do that again. I am married, and I'm not going to put up with that, you silly rabbit. You know?
Who was the guy? I mean, what was the guy?
He was a doctor. So it was a power dynamic. Okay. He's the doc, she's the nurse, and this is the 1970s. Mm-hmm. She never mentioned it to me. She probably mentioned it to my dad, but it was the first I had ever heard of her having that thing. And she, at that position, at that moment, felt like she had the authority and the imprimatur to say, cut it out. And she said, never happened again, and that was that.
Well, she said an interesting thing. She said, I am a married woman.
Yeah.
Which invokes that, and my husband will come and beat you up.
Or also that I'm just not interested in you, pal. I mean, that I'm interested in somebody else.
Yeah, I think there's also an invoking of the husband. Mm-hmm. I mean, in an unrelated topic, I know a woman who worked at Home Depot. And she let people assume that there was a man in her life. And I asked her why, and she said, well, they treat me differently if they're expecting somebody to protect me.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was a very conscious thing. So, I mean, that's why I picked up on I am a married woman, which is also especially in the 70s, she was more respectable as a married woman.
Right. Right. But, I mean, why is it that when the allegations against Bill Cosby came out, or O'Reilly, or Roger Ailes, or, even way back, Woody Allen, these were all highly publicized things. And, of course, there's Trump, bragging to this guy, Billy Bush. About, his various conquests. Why is it that those weren't sort of dam-breaking moments, and this one with Weinstein really does appear to be?
Well, I think it's complex, and I think there are different cases. Bill Cosby mostly victimized women who we didn't know. Many of them were women of color. And I think we can maybe come back to that, because I think that's important. When you talk about victimizing journalists, women who are journalists are not seen, and even by their own self-definitions, there's been research on this, as feminine as other women. They move into masculine spaces. They have to move in spaces that, in ways that are exactly the same as men. And so they are seen as different. When actresses with whom we've emoted, and we've lived with them for maybe two or three hours in a movie or every week, then that's something different. We felt
and they,
with
and
them.
They help us define femininity itself.
Yeah,
right?
The ideal.
Yeah, they're the ideal.
Well, I mean, and one of the things that's inherent in this is that they are Hollywood standard beautiful. And of course, beauty equals virtue. I mean, that's an ancient idea, but one that is upheld.
Got lots more to talk about, and we shall do so after a quick break. Dr. Sherry Parks from the University of Maryland, she's the author of Fierce Angels, Living with a Legacy from the Sacred Dark Feminine to the Strong Black Woman. More of Midday Culture Connections when we come back, 410-662-8780. That's how you can join our conversation. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. A reminder that today is Election Day in 13 municipalities here in Maryland, so be sure to cast your vote. If you live in Frederick or Annapolis or Gaithersburg, College Park, Chestertown, or any of the other jurisdictions where voting is underway, polls close tonight at 8 o'clock. Nathan Sterner will have results for you tomorrow morning during Morning Edition. Tomorrow is the one-year anniversary of the election of Donald Trump. So here on Midday tomorrow, we'll get analysis of the governor's race in Virginia with Washington Post columnist E.J. Dion and Norman Ornstein of the American Enterprise Institute. Their new book is called One Nation After Trump, A Guide for the Perplexed, the Disillusioned, the Desperate, and the Not Yet Deported. So what will the Virginia governor's race tell us about presidents' political standing, and what is the way forward as candidates begin campaigning for the 2018 midterm elections, which take place at this time next year? If you're just joining us today, it's Midday Culture Connections with Dr. Sherry Parks. Sherry's an associate professor in the Department of American Studies at the University of Maryland, College Park. She's the author of Fierce Angels, Living with a Legacy from the Sacred Dark Feminine to the Strong Black Woman. We're talking about the sexual assault allegations against Harvey Weinstein and many other powerful men in and outside of Hollywood. Our number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Let's go to Kathy in Baltimore. Kathy, welcome to Midday with Sherry Parks.
Thank you.
So what's on your mind today? Thanks for your call.
I can't help but wonder, for how many men have this impulse to reach out and touch a woman who's a stranger? And if it's most men, is it only the powerful who can get away with it, and so they do it? It just seems like such an odd impulse to me, but it seems to be pretty common when you read these stories.
Thanks for the call, Kathy. I'm with you, Kathy. I mean, just the notion that Harvey Weinstein can, you know, answer the door to his office or his hotel room naked and somehow think that that's going to be some great aphrodisiac for the woman on the other side of the transom is amazing to me. Where do people get this idea that you should do this?
Well, I don't think that he cares whether the woman finds him attractive or not. This is about power. He has enough power to coerce her to service him. I mean, this is not about finding her having to find him attractive. So let's, you know, we need to be clear about that. This is not, despite all of those movies, this is not about, you know, this woman looking into his eyes and falling in love with him.
Well, the reason I brought that up is because in the Slate article, one of the women who accused him of doing just that said to her, like, 2 weeks later, you know, did you find me sexy when you saw me without any clothes on or something? He brought it up to her. So,
but it's not a requirement for the transaction.
No, not at all.
Well, and I think you don't need much power. Although we focused on powerful men, you only need a little. I mean, when you mentioned interns a minute ago, there was a case. I mean, I was a faculty member, and it actually led to a policy change, I'm happy to say, where a student wanted to go on a media internship that hadn't been vetted by the university, and I warned her against it, but another person okayed it. Well, she was sexually harassed, and I reported it, and the guy got fired. Now it's very difficult to go on an internship that hasn't been vetted by the university. The guy only needed a little bit of power and opportunity. You don't need to be president. Right. You don't need to
be Harvey Weinstein.
Just to have a little and have, or just be physically stronger.
Andrew in New Freedom, Pennsylvania, welcome to Midday with Dr. Sherry Parks. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, thank you very much for taking my call. I think part of the problem is political partisanship. Now, I don't belong to any political party right now, but I know when Bill Clinton was running in 81 and, the scandals that came out at the time, it just quickly went into the background. And, he was accused of rape and a number of other things, and it just kind of disappeared into the background for 8 years. You had this guy in office. And I kind of see the same thing with the anti-war movement. When the Democrats came into power with Obama, it just the anti-war movement just disappeared because he was a Democrat, even though he got us involved in two more wars. We can't be taking sides. Politics should not matter in something so serious as this. I appreciate your comments.
Thanks for the call, Andrew. And, of course, the president didn't get involved in two more wars. He did, however, continue involvement in the two wars that he inherited. But this notion of political power and Clinton, there's a big argument among many folks in political circles about, for example, whether the relationship between Mr. Clinton and Monica Lewinsky was consensual or not. And can you have such thing as a consensual relationship when you're no less a figure than the president of the United States and the other person is an intern? Is there even the possibility of a consensual relationship in that scenario? What do you think? And of course, the specter of Donald Trump hangs over all of this when it comes to politics.
Well, I think the differential in power is really important, and I would argue that if the woman has very little power and the man has a great deal of power, then consent often isn't even asked for, but that is very difficult to give. And I think this is a really important point that I want to tease out, because there's been much made of women who had conversations with the man or was photographed by the man after the supposed harassment. And I think we really have to be nuanced about how power works, that he may have gotten away with it and still have continuing power in her life. So if she wants to have a job or if she wants to have a role, in a perfect world, maybe she should say, do what your wife did, slap the hand away. Your mother. But she took a risk that the next day some fault might be found in her work and she didn't have a job. That story is a very common story. And so I think we have to be really clear about how power works in a nuanced way. I don't think that an intern and a president, the power to take your own body out of that situation takes enormous risk that you don't have a job the next day. Maybe it's less for an intern.
So consent isn't even part of the equation here.
Well,
maybe because there are those who say that, Miss Lewinsky was flirting with the president and, was doing certain things that were seen as seductive. And they imply that, this was something, a relationship was something of great interest to her. Of course, this has been, parsed for decades now, but
and there's a lot of thought that's gone into what it means to come of age as a young woman, and I certainly seen lots of young women who recognize that they have a little bit of power if a powerful man is attracted to them, but have no clue of what they're playing with, have no clue about the downside of that and mm-hmm. how dangerous that could be. If you've watched too many Disney movies, you can come away thinking that you're enormously powerful, and you're not.
Yeah. CJ sends us an email. As much as I applaud and support the women exposing these actions, the outcome results in a guilty until proven innocent scenario, which does run counter to our society. Can you comment on the statute of limitations issued related to these claims and if there is intent to formally sue?
Well, the statutes of limitations vary by state and the severity of the case. I know certainly in New York they're saying they're going to investigate anything and see what sticks. which is important because, you know, some of the Weinstein allegations happened in New York. And I mean, if we're talking about rape, the statute of limitations can be decades. And so I think that's important. I think more to CJ's point is that there is a court of public opinion, and someone can be seen as virtuous again if there's a public flogging. And often we use the media to publicly flog, you know, somebody who's done something. And I think that's important, is that after we flog somebody enough and then we get tired of them, sometimes justice doesn't happen. You know, if with Bill Cosby, he's old, he may be blind, it's not clear. And there are people who are saying, well, leave him alone. And that may not be very satisfactory to the women who may have been drugged.
Sure. And this notion of length of time, you know, Mark Halperin at MSNBC, he was accused of doing things back in the 90s when he was working at ABC. And there are people who are saying, well, okay, that was 20 years ago. Should he lose his job because of stuff he did 20 years ago? It's kind of reminds me of during the campaign, Mrs. Clinton dealing with Black Lives Matter criticisms of her and her husband's crime policies in the 1990s. And her response was in part, look, that was a long time ago. We've evolved. We now know that that wasn't such a good idea. You got to give me a break.
Well, I mean, it's kind of taking time heals all wounds to the extreme.
Right.
That if you wait long enough, it doesn't matter anymore. If it's still within the lifetime of a person and they've been traumatized, they're still traumatized. And time helps, but it doesn't, it's not erasure. The other part of that that some people have said is, well, you know, that was then and this is what I'm used to, or this is the way manhood was when I came of age.
Yeah, it was different in the 80s. It was different in the 90s.
Which is the counter evolution argument that people don't change, that somehow they missed the second wave of feminism and that that time doesn't matter. And you have both ideas floating out there at the same time, which obviously is a contradiction.
410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. Dr. Sherry Parks from the University of Maryland is here. It's Midday Culture Connections. Loretta in Frederick, welcome to the program. Thanks for your call.
Hi, thank you, Tom. I can't speak for others, but I know for me, the dam breaking was basically when Trump got elected. I was, and I know a lot of my female friends and males as well, were just so horrified that a man who bragged about what it was that he did could actually get elected to the highest office in the U.S. And Trump acts like he's like a burr underneath a saddle. You know, some men are, in a sense, able to escape, that there may be an accusation that comes against them, but because they at least behave to some degrees like other decent men, some of these accusations can sort of fade into the background. But Trump, on a daily and sometimes almost an hourly basis, is so vile in so many ways that there's just that constant irritation. And I think women have had it. It was the last straw for a lot of us. And that dam was just about to break, and it did.
Well, thanks for the call, Loretta. I appreciate it. You know, so it's larger than even perhaps sexual harassment. It's just, you know, a feeling of, I don't know how you'd even define it. I mean, just there's a sort of a dimension of hopelessness or just anger that was, in fact, unleashed a year ago today.
On both sides.
Yeah.
And the presidency has been degraded. I mean, it started being degraded with the advent of television when we began to elect presidents the way we would buy soap. I mean, and that's actually a quote. I mean, we'll sell the president like a bar of soap. And we heard with George Bush the Jr. that people elected a president that they thought they could have a beer with. Well, you know, that's not the job of the president to be the guy next door that we're going to have a beer with. But there's been this gradual degradation of the presidency. And so now things that would have been unthinkable even 15, maybe even 10 years ago are before us in a degraded presidency. I don't know who could be president next and elevated back up very quickly.
And of course, we've had 8 years of an Obama administration that was scandal-free, and mm-hmm. The Obama family was a paradigm for what a family should be. This is a man who's, you know, making sure he's having dinner every night that he can with his family. He's got two young daughters and stuff. We've had that kind of paradigm, and then it's contrasted so blatantly with the current president. Jessica Leeds, who's now in her 70s, accused Mr. Trump of groping her on a plane long time ago, 30 years ago. And she says, she quotes to the Post, it's hard to reconcile that Harvey Weinstein could be brought down with this and that Trump just continues to be the Teflon Don. So there are people, and the president perhaps is chief among them, who are getting away with it.
Well, as far as we know, there is a difference in the severity of the behavior. I can't believe I just said that either.
I mean, because again, this is okay. If this happened 30 years ago, do we just give him a pass?
No. I'm not. I'm
of
not
course
making.
We don't.
I'm
yeah.
not making the time argument. But as the accusations are actually different. But yes, I do think that we can expect a certain amount of virtue in the presidency that this violates, certainly.
Black Lives Matter. You've made the point that was a movement founded by women.
Yeah.
And that the gender tension in the civil rights movement dating back to the time of Dr. King and even before. There's a book that you hit me to about Rosa Parks, who we like to sort of think of as this nice, quiet lady who sat on the bus.
No relation, evidently.
Yeah. Evidently.
I wish.
You're trying.
I wish.
Not for lack of trying. You know, but in fact, Rosa Parks was an investigator for the NAACP and came to prominence in the 40s investigating a rape. There's a new film that's just been released about that. Tell us that story.
Well, I mean, it actually speaks to the whole civil rights movement that this, and the book you were pointing to is Danielle McGuire at the Dark End of the Street, that many of the strategies of the Black Civil Rights Movement really were created by women, including Rosa Parks in terms of anti-rape, that boycotting, leafleting, all of that was because they were, and it's interesting because the Soviet Union becomes a factor in here, that white men were raping black women with impunity as a way of terrorizing not only the woman but her family and her community and daring them to report it. Black women, like women now, were reporting it, but the white press was not reporting it. So the Soviet Union got wind of it because the black press was reporting it and then said, see what they're doing in the United States? And so the Justice Department called down and said, you need to indict somebody. So they didn't indict the powerful men, back to the point that Kathy made earlier. They indicted a couple of poor white men. They were not, it was a capital crime. They were not put to death. But that idea of how power operates, but how women took and created strategies that were then used by men, and the women were silenced. They fully expected that they would be full partners, and that did not happen.
Yeah, and the Soviet Union using it as a propaganda tool.
Right.
Yeah. Let's see if we can get one more call before we go to a break. Ian in Towson, welcome to Midday with Dr. Sherry Parks.
Hey there. How are we doing?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
So what's on your mind today?
Well, about 20 years ago, 20 years ago, I sexually harassed and forced myself onto an employee. She had absolutely no chance of escape. She managed to get out of the room, and nothing happened to her, but I wasn't punished. And it's one of those things that when you hear this happening and you see it on the news, and although it only happened once, the guilt that gets associated with it, it's crazy.
Can you think back to that time and now explain what made you, what was the impulse there to make you inappropriate?
I was in my mid-20s and I had just been given a job with immense power, you know, 1,500 employees. And I was sent to Africa, and there was this African woman that was very attractive, and it was almost as though it was my right. I felt as though it was my right to have her. And I felt no remorse. For probably a year, I felt no remorse. And then I started hanging around with less expat, more Peace Corps volunteers, and actually interacting with Africans in a different manner. And that's when the guilt and actually the realization of what I'd done set in. So I left the industry, pretty much changed careers because of it.
So I think I'm sorry.
No, go for it.
It's really interesting, and thank you for being so candid, that you said you saw it as a right, because I think that is important. It's not about the individual woman. She was attractive, and so that was part of it, but it was more part of something that he got, the birthright. And I think that's often the way men with power have approached women. It's not about love. It's not about you. It's something they get that comes with the job. Now, I mean, Ian, we were talking about black women a minute ago, and you brought in that she was a black woman. Can you talk about your feelings about race and gender and power at the time? And we understand that now you feel differently, but can you talk about it at the time?
At that stage, I think what it came from was having too much power given to me in such a short period. I wasn't emotionally mature enough to handle that. And you're right. It wasn't that she was black. If she had been in Asia or any other part of the world, in a third world environment, I think it would have been the same. It was that she was almost just a fringe benefit, and it was perceived that way by lots of people. It was absolutely socially acceptable in that situation.
Let me ask you, say you were never punished. Is that because the woman never filed a complaint or complained
no,
to you directly?
The woman never filed a complaint. It was.
Did you have an opportunity to apologize to her at any point?
No. No, I left Africa 20 years ago, 18 years ago.
Well, and that's consistent in that in a way it wasn't about her. You said nothing happened to her, but something did happen to her. And so the remedy was to leave the powerful situation rather than go back to the woman. And I'm not trying to beat you up, but I think this helps us to dissect the situation. So I'm thankful that you've called in.
Well, I appreciate your candor as well, Ian. We got to take a break. Thanks for your call. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can find us on Twitter, @MiddayTomHall. More with Dr. Sherry Parks when we come back from a break. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, it's Midday Culture Connections with Dr. Sherry Park. She's an associate professor in the Department of American Studies at the University of Maryland in College Park. We're talking about the male power dynamic in the context of the avalanche of accusations of sexual assault and harassment against Harvey Weinstein and many others in Hollywood and other industries. Almost 8% of rapes occur at work. Nearly 20% of women college students report attempted or completed assaults. According to the Centers for Disease Control, more than 40% of women who are raped are assaulted before they are 18 years old. You are welcome to join our difficult and important conversation, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall.
And Tom, I want to add more context to that because, I mean, rape is clear, but if you ask older women, there was a study that actually was done here where you ask older women about their first sexual experience and whether they felt they were in control of that, the number who say that they were not jumps up to 48%. Mm. So, I mean, there's that power differential, first sexual experiences for many women is not the 16-year-old, 16-year-old, 18-year-old, you know, or whatever. It's with an older man.
And this brings up another thing. You know, we were talking about the distinctions, if there are, between the allegations against Mr. Weinstein and the allegations against Mr. Clinton, for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, Donald Trump himself paraded these women who had accused Clinton of impropriety as a prop at one of the mm-hmm. debates.
Yes.
I mean, he was more than happy to buy into that.
To unnerve Hillary.
Yeah, to unnerve, right, his opponent and her husband. There are nuances here. It's like, it reminds me of people who equivalent racism only with, or make racism seem like it's only the people carrying the torches and
right.
members of the Ku Klux Klan, as if you can't have racism manifested in much more subtle ways. So there,
right.
for all the rape allegations and that, you know, he touched me and he fondled me and he did, you know, that's pretty clear. That's cut and dry, right? But there's all sorts of stuff that isn't cut and dry, that is very subtle and nuanced and can be creepy as can be, but very difficult to complain about, very difficult to call, even to call somebody out about.
And that's what I mean about the milieu in which women, particularly women who are in places where women haven't been heretofore, have to operate. You have to decide constantly, do I make a big deal about it? I used to get in trouble as a young woman because I tend to look people directly into their eyes. And men with power aren't used to that. Evidently, it was something I had to learn. And they would say, but you looked at me. How do I talk to you without looking
yeah,
at you?
Right.
And it was just that they weren't used to people looking at them directly in their eyes. And that couldn't have been because I felt some power in the moment. It must have been that I found, you know, somebody 30 years older than me to be attractive. And so that is about power. I mean, often, I mean, stories I've told when I was a younger woman was because I was in spaces where young Black women were not supposed to be, so I must be there for their pleasure. And so I'm very sensitive to this idea of the nuance, because young women, particularly young women, but certainly it happens to old women too, trust me, is a way of diminishing you, of saying the only reason you're here is because I'm attracted to you.
Yeah, power is all about that. You
right.
diminish the enemy, you know.
Right.
You are superior in
right.
whatever way you can figure out right. how to be superior. Laura in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Dr. Sherry Parks.
Well, thank you. What a pleasure to speak to both of you, such legends in the area. My point is that the first three articles I saw when this story broke were from right-wing media with pictures of Weinstein and Hillary Clinton, and they were aim was to smear Hillary Clinton by this association, which I find a really ironic way of this making it to the media. And I think it's, you ask why this is a watershed moment. And I think it because it had some unusual backing in the beginning when the story broke. I don't think it was their intention. I think it was a deflection of, wait, you say Trump is so bad, look at this guy. But I do think that that is one reason that it has, made a watershed moment, whereas other things failed.
Because he had given some money, he had donated to Hillary's campaign.
Sure.
And so that was the connection. I think she since said she was going to give it to charity. And you're right, that was one of the responses. Now, I mean, we have to double back.
And there are all sorts of other pictures now of every actress or actor who's, you know, chummed it up with Weinstein at awards shows and stuff like that. And there are a lot of actors trying to, of both genders, trying to, handle that in the media.
Because, I mean, that goes back to something I said earlier. We act as if that's evidence of innocence. If the woman was still in his environment afterwards, that somehow was an indication of his innocence. And we know now that he sent some of those photographs to his board of directors. Like, see? I mean, I couldn't have done this because this woman is smiling at me 2 weeks later, when maybe she was smiling because she wanted to keep her job.
Yeah, and he did a whole lot more than that. There's this piece by Ronan Farrow that was published on the website of The New Yorker last night,
mm-hmm.
outlining this incredibly intricate network of spies, is what it amounts to. I mean, he hired
yeah.
undercover investigators, some of whom had worked for Mossad and Israel and other.
He hired the most elite intelligence people in the world.
Yeah, because he can afford anything he wants to buy. David Boyce, the attorney that ordered that argued the Gore versus Bush case, that argued for same-sex marriage against the Supreme Court, is the head of the law firm that approved this and that worked on Weinstein's behalf. But he's hiring this network of spies to ingratiate themselves with some of the accusers and to look for dirt. I guess politicians would call it opposition research on the journalists who were writing about this. Weinstein had wind of the fact that Farrow at the New Yorker and folks at the New York Times were going to publish something, and he was out to try to squelch it before it came out. It's a appalling and unbelievable story.
It's online.
Yeah.
You can read it online. And that gets back to the whole aspect of power, is that he was using for years, evidently, his power to squelch the stories and to disparage the women. And there were lists of the women's former lovers. I mean, that kind of, who wants that type of information out in the public sphere?
And one of these actresses, Rose McGowan, who's been very out front in her accusations and, confrontations with Weinstein, there was a woman who posed as a feminist and a wealth advisor, and over a period of many, many months tried to develop a friendship with Miss McGowan, who, when she found out who this person actually was, she created this persona that was completely fake. Miss McGowan was completely appalled that, they had gone to that kind of length to suppress what she was doing.
And women were promised book deals and all kinds of things that seemed up and up, and they were really ruses to find out how willing they would be to talk to the press. And there was a phrase that basically were personal impeachment to try to find any dirt on the woman, but they're also profiling women to see, they evidently had a profile of if you're likely to report what he did or not. And if you fit that profile, you got more attention.
Yeah. We'll post a link to that piece in the New Yorker on our website. Just got a couple of minutes left, Sherry. In terms of how corporations and companies and various entities respond to this, here at NPR, of course, we're an affiliate of NPR and we're not part of NPR, but Mike Oreskes, the senior editor at NPR, was dismissed. And there are a lot of people in the NPR newsroom in DC and around the world who are quite dissatisfied with the way that NPR management handled it. But again, do you think the Weinstein Company, the company that produces House of Cards, the NPR, are they reacting in an appropriate way? And are they doing what needs to be done?
Well, just firing the bad man is not a remedy. That doesn't necessarily change culture. And, purge the badness is a very simplistic way to approach that. You need to think about the culture that gave rise to the silence. Not just the act, but the silence, and address that.
But the firing, is that the right first step? I mean, is not firing also an alternative? Working with the person, and, Weinstein himself started saying, well, clearly I need help.
I'm going to circle back to Ian, that very brave man who called in. I mean, what would have changed the culture? I mean, when he left the culture that said this is your right, he left it intact. If they had circled back to the unnamed woman and all of those unnamed women and talked to them and created some conversation. I mean, justice is not, punishment and justice are not always the same thing. I mean, there is no restoration there.
Is there an equivalence between sexual harassment and religious intolerance or racism? I mean, if Kevin Spacey had made racist remarks, should he have been fired from House of Cards as opposed to harassing young men?
They're all about power, aren't they? They're all about people making themselves feel better by making other people feel worse, and they're connected. I'm not saying they're equal, but I think they're connected, and those isms tend to run together. When you find one, you tend to find the other.
Well, we will do our best to find as much other stuff as we can the next time you're here for our Midday Culture Connections. Always fascinating to speak with you. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you.
Sherry Park, she's an associate professor in the Department of American Studies at the University of Maryland College Park. She's the author of Fierce Angels, Living with a Legacy from the Sacred Dark Feminine to the Strong Black Woman. She joins us every month for Culture Connections right here on Midday. Coming up tomorrow, on the anniversary of Donald Trump's surprise election victory last year, Washington Post columnist E.J. Dion joins me, along with Norman Ornstein of the American Enterprise Institute. Their new book is called One Nation After Trump: A Guide for the Perplexed, the Disillusioned, the Desperate, and the Not Yet Deported. E.J. Dionne and Norm Ornstein. Join me tomorrow, and I hope you can join us, too, here on Midday. I'd like to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch today. Joe Squared serves coal-fired pizzas, risotto, and local craft beers. They've got locations and hours at joesquared.com. I'm Tom Hall. Appreciate your calls, your emails. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.